Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for May 26th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with playwright Todd Logan. He'll be talking to Tom Williams about his show, Botanic Gardens, and we also have Chicago's theater news for you. So get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is playwright, filmmaker, and humorist Todd Logan, whose current show, Botanic Gardens, it was so successful that it's now been remounted at Piccolo Theater at the Evanston Arts Depot on Main Street. Hello, Todd.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. Well, tell us about Botanic Gardens. It's a terrific story, and the whole creation of it, because you are the playwright, and you ended up with some major people involved in it. So tell us the story.
Okay, let me give you a little bit of background. This play was originally supposed to open up in New York at the 78th Street Theater Lab in New York City on the Upper West Side at 78th Street and Broadway last September, and I was literally 15 paces off Broadway, but it was really an off Broadway production. And in August, we began rehearsals, and after 1 week of rehearsals, the director and the producers had a battle of egos, and the producers won out, and they canceled the play.
Wow, I didn't know that.
True story. And on my way to New York, I had just launched a website, toddlogansdesk.com, and on that website, it has recordings with the original cast of several of my plays, and you can also see my movie With a Family Like Mine. And I had written my first blog, and the blog was titled Theater Camp. And I wrote about my excitement about having a play in New York. Well, 11 days later, Tom, I was on a plane back to Chicago, and I wrote my second blog, and that was called Theater Camp Sucked. And we were doing
now work. I'm going to have to go back and read it.
And we were doing work on our house, and we had a very nice man as a general contractor, a gentleman named Mark Fettner, and he'd been at our house with us a couple months. And he knew I was down in the dumps about having my play canceled. And he sidled up alongside me one day and said, "So what are you going to do now?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. I'm not even thinking about it anymore." And he said, "Well, what's involved?" And I said, "You don't want to know." And he said, "Really, what's involved?" And I said, "Mark, there's no money in theater." Well, 3 days later, Mark and I met, also with Mark's son, David, who works for him, and is also an aspiring writer. And David had read the play, Mark had read the play, and we were sitting across a table, and I said to both of them, "Raise your right hands and repeat after me. We are now going to talk about theater and money, and that makes us certifiably insane." And
now I see the humorous side of you.
And they did. They raised their right hands. They repeated that. And an hour later, they decided to back the play. And then I was back in business. And I was determined to try and get a top-tier director from Chicago and top-tier actors for the play. And this is a play that was written 3 years ago and had six stage readings and had terrific Chicago actors. The very first stage reading was at the Chicago Dramatists with Scott Jake and Annabelle Armour.
That's top drawer. Yeah.
It's been a long journey, and I keep track of all of my emails. I don't throw them away. And I can plug in Botanic Gardens up in the upper right-hand corner of my Mac, and I will see that I have over 6,000 emails relating to the play. So now I was in search of a director and or cast. And I remembered that Carmen Roman had done a reading of it at American Theater Company 2 years earlier. Her husband, Jim Lemming, was supposed to do the reading with her, only he was put in a show at Steppenwolf. After the reading, we all went out for drinks, and Jim showed up, and Jim is a great-looking guy, and I thought, boy, he'd make the perfect Jake, the character in the play. And I asked Carmen, who was a very strong, powerful actress, I said, Carmen, what would it have been like if you had done the reading with Jim? She said, I would have cried throughout. And I was surprised by that. But it just was tucked away in the back of my mind, and now here we are 2 years later, and I tracked them down, and they were both in Door County at Peninsula Players, where they spend most of their summers doing summer stock theater. And I believe it's the oldest summer stock theater in the country.
Terrific stuff, yeah.
Terrific stuff. And I contacted them, and they said they'd read the play again. They called me and said they were interested. I drove up to Door County, 4.5-hour drive. We did a table reading. Carmen cried twice. And we agreed. I offered them the roles, and they accepted, contingent upon that we could find a director we all agreed upon. Carmen said to me there was somebody she worked with in New York. They were all part of the same theater group, and she wanted to ask this person to direct. She said she felt this person could really get into the meat of the material. And I said, sure. And she said, well, I think you may know the name. And I said, what's the name? And she said, Olympia Dukakis. Well, Tom, I kept a straight face. And I think if the old Zapruder camera was on me, it would have shown looks of total disbelief, hilarity, because I knew there was no way Olympia Dukakis was coming to Chicago to direct a play of mine. But Carmen was very determined, very persistent, and Olympia had been traveling. She had been in Russia. I think she'd been in Canada. And 2 months later, I was on a plane to New York. I went to the restaurant Serafina and met Carmen and Olympia. And when Olympia walked into the restaurant, she said, this woman is in pain and we need to get beneath the words.
Wow.
And we spent 4 hours at dinner talking about the play, talking about the characters. And I had been warned by my wife and my children that whatever I do, do not try to be funny. They said, Dad, you're not funny. And if you try to be funny, you'll blow the deal. And I did try one joke, and it stopped the conversation. Olympia looked at Carmen and said, you know, he has a droll sense of humor. You don't feel compelled to laugh.
Great line.
At the end of dinner, it was clear that Olympia was going to come to Chicago to direct. And her last question was, what's Chicago like in January? And I answered, balmy.
Well, it has been.
Well, it has been. It wasn't balmy when Olympia was there in January.
No, it was one of the coldest winters.
It was. But this has been an amazing experience, just a great, great ride. Olympia, Carmen, and Jim are all advocates of collaboration in theater. And even though in Chicago there is a fair amount of collaboration, they believe in hardcore collaboration, and that means everybody sits down at the table, not just the director, the writer, and the actors, but all of the designers. And we spent 3 days in December. Olympia flew into Chicago, and everybody sat around the table, and Olympia said, okay, we're all going to figure out together how to tell this story. And it was an intense 3 days, but it's very unusual to let a set designer or even a costume designer say, here's how I see the play.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm hearing.
That doesn't happen. That's amazing.
It does not happen. But the play only got better and better. And believe it or not, at the end of 3 days, a play that was ready to go in New York was now 20 pages shorter. And as a writer, I was very, very comfortable at the trims.
Yeah, you were
I was good. Very comfortable. Nothing changed in terms of the scenes. Every scene had remained the same. The storytelling just got cleaner, got faster, and that part was a great experience. We then spent a week in New York doing table work with just Olympia, Carmen and Jim, and myself, and our assistant director, Joe Faust. And Olympia's great. She is a very, very bright woman. She gets the meat of the material. This play, Botanic Garden, she identified with it. She said it's a play about walking through the door. And sometimes when you've had a setback in life, you have to go back and revisit some painful moments of your life before you can go forward. And she very much identified with the play.
So this is a good time to talk about what the play is about.
Yeah, the play is about a widow in her mid-50s, and she's invited on a date to the Botanic Gardens. And she's only had 2 dates in the 2 years since her husband died, and they were with somebody from her support group. And she said, I didn't like it. I didn't have a good time. So here she is having an anxiety attack about having to go on this date. And the play opens up with a conversation with a man off stage and talking about how scared she is about going on the date. And it really examines the relationship of the character Kate and her husband Jake, and it goes back and forth from scenes from their marriage to whether or not Kate will walk out that door at the end of the play.
Yeah, and it's one of the things I liked about it was that you captured the pain so well of letting go, and then going back and seeing that they didn't always have the greatest marriage in the world, that they were like most people.
Well, and a lot of people comment that they feel that that they identify, that it captures the ups and downs of marriage. And that, to me, was a challenge in writing the play. And Olympia made an interesting comment to me one of the first times we met. She said, you know, she said, really, Kate's the author of the play because she selects the scenes that she goes that they go back to.
That's true because it's a memory play.
Because it's a memory play.
Right.
And sometimes she does not come across in the most flattering way. But you look back at it, that's really a choice that she's made. She's selected these scenes for a reason, to help her as she moves forward in her journey.
Well, let me ask you this. As the playwright, how did you approach this? Was this story based on any experiences you have, people you know? Or?
Well, the inspiration came from a friend who told me a story about having not gone on a date after their husband died for really 5 or 6 years. And then they finally accepted a date to the movies, and they were dressed and ready to go 45 minutes before the date picked them up, and they were just sitting in their living room waiting. And while they were waiting, they started to become angry and angrier at their husband for dying. It was the first time they really had gotten angry, because here they were in this absurd, ridiculous position of having to go on a date. And I love the story, and that gave me the setup. But also at the time, I had my lifelong best friend's wife had been dying of a horrible illness, scleroderma, and she was really at the end stage of her illness, and I was very close to her. And I remember talking to her, and she said to me her greatest fear was she would not be remembered by her family after she passed. And I think also I'll admit I'm 54 years old, at that stage of life, you have these themes floating in your head. And I decided here was an opportunity to explore those themes.
Well, I think you did a marvelous job at it. Tell us the audience reaction to this play. And don't give away some of the key stuff. They have to come up to Piccolo Theater to see it.
They have to come up to the Piccolo Theater. I think the audience reaction has been great. I mean, we had a very successful run at Victory Gardens, and now we're at Piccolo Theater. And one thing we do every night is we have a discussion with me and Carmen Roman and Jim Lemming, the actors in the play.
That's true. After every performance.
After every performance.
Good time to say when the performances are.
Performances are Thursday through Sunday, 8 o'clock, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 3 o'clock on Sunday. For tickets, www.botanicgardentheplay.com. And we'd love to have you come see the play. But the audience is really taken by it. There's a tremendous amount of identification, not just for those who have lost people in their lives, but also just the nature of the way the play examines marriage and relationships. And there's a scene in there that deals with the concept of spark, where Jake lays down the gauntlet, and it's a flashback, and tells Kate they need more spark in their lives.
And that concept of spark, that I'm sure a lot of people related to that.
And a lot of people relate to it, and as we caught on how much people were relating to it, by the fifth show, at the end of the show, we were handing out buttons, and after every show, you can take a button, and one button says sparker, and the other one says not a sparker. And I would say right now, it's running 3-1. People say they're sparkers, and to those who are not sparkers, and some people take both, because they say, well, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I spark, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, I don't.
That's terrific. That's terrific. So tell us the dynamic of having a real-life husband and wife team in this show?
They're asked the question every night. Yeah. And so I'm really going to give you the answer that they give.
Okay, sure.
Carmen and Jim love working with each other. The material is it's very intimate material. They have not dealt with major health scares in their own relationship. They feel the show is a tribute to some people that they've been very close to who have lost spouses. But they say it's certainly to work on material that is about life and death is definitely a challenge for them. But at the same time, they have a tremendous trust with each other, and especially on stage. And
yeah, it sure comes across that way. Yeah,
comes across. Yeah. So the chemistry is terrific. And they're also out of the school and of a play is never done. It's never finished. And the acting is never finished. The staging is never finished. And most plays, and I've had, as you know, I've had several plays up in Chicago.
Sure.
And after opening night, that play's locked in. And, well, what we discovered in the opening, in our post-show discussions, well, we would talk about the themes of this show. But we'd also talk about certain things about how the show came across. And we began to make tweaks. We began to make adjustments. And we found even the last night of the run at Victory Gardens, I added 3 new lines to the play.
Very good.
And then we took a break for 2 months, and we sat down again, and we went back to work on the play. And we wanted to take the character of Kate and we wanted to bring a little more richness to her. Some people felt they wanted to know more about her. And it's not that we were just accommodating the audience. But it's this concept that, again, the play is never done. It can keep getting better and better.
You know, I agree with that, and so do a lot of the great playwrights. I know Armadeus, he's written 2 more endings. The last time it was produced in Chicago, he came in to write another ending for it and tweaked it. So you're in good company.
Well, thank you.
One of the things that I'd like to know is the difference generally in the tone of the play from the Victory Gardens production to the one here at Piccolo. You were telling me earlier that it's emerged and it's a little different.
Well, the character of Kate has softened over time. And people really found the play compelling. They liked the play. They found it thought-provoking, but they didn't necessarily were universally believe she was the most sympathetic character. And as a writer, that can be okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's legitimate. She doesn't have to be the nice person.
She does not have to be the nice person. But I felt as the writer, I felt I'd written a sympathetic character. And I took that as a challenge because I wanted my work to come across with the original intention. And working with Carmen and Jim, and what's one of the things that was fascinating in this whole process is they began to own the characters. I mean,
yeah, I can see that they're 2 top drawer actors.
Top drawer actors, but they bring a level of professionalism and care and attention to detail. And it was Olympia had the same thing. Olympia, 76 years old. She'd rehearse 8 hours a day, be up on her feet the whole time, bouncing up all the time, and really got the language of the play, got the themes of the play, and then she'd be off doing interviews. And we were just stunned by her energy. But in that same spirit, we've continued. And with Carmen and Jim, everything has to feel real and honest to them. To get from one line to the next, to be able to make a turn in a scene. And we continue to reevaluate all the time and saying, and the more we know, well, the more things we find out, and we start asking those questions.
Well, that's a good incentive for people who saw the original play to come back and see it again.
Love for them to come back and see it again.
Yeah, it's one of those plays that you can see. Definitely it's one, I believe it's one you can see a second time. You know, there are some plays that's fine. If I never see it again, that's great. But there are others that you want to see it, especially if it grows. Wow, that's strong. So you're proud of this show.
Oh, I'm thrilled about the show.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled. And again, another concept that I've learned to embrace is that we talk about having the post-show discussions. And as we say, the audience is the third cast member. And it was something Olympia said. We don't know what we have until we hear from the audience. And we had 9 previews. And after each preview, we had a post-show discussion. And, you know, here we have a celebrity like Olympia Dukakis, and Olympia wasn't interested in listening to people flatter and say, I saw you in Moonstruck, and you're my favorite. It was really, we need your help. Let's get down to it. Let's talk about this play. What's working for you? What's not working for you?
Well, that's kind of brave of all of you to do that, because there's an awful lot of directors and writers and actors who you have to take them kicking and screaming to do any kind of a talk back, because they feel it's done, and that's it. They kind of don't want to hear. Maybe it's their insecurity. I'm not sure why, but.
Well, Carmen and Jim, they're very secure. And again, it's in this grounding that the work is never done, and the audience is a critical part of the process that we go through. And so we embrace it, and we find that discussions, they'll ask us what changes might have been made or what tweaks were made. And just even last weekend, we had somebody said, you know, I didn't quite understand this line. And we looked at each other and we realized, gee, we can just make one little change in that line and it'll be clear for that person. Other people got it. But you know what? We want everybody to get it.
Well, that's terrific. And the show is running at Piccolo Theater up at the Main Street Evanston, right at in the train depot. It's a unique place where this interview is taking. We're sitting right in the space, and this is quite intimate.
Which has been a different experience.
Yeah, because it's a little larger at Victory Gardens.
Victory
you were in
Gardens
the upstairs.
Larger, yeah. But one of our challenges was really to see, is this play portable?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a 2-person play. It's a set that's a minimal set. Lighting, though, is very, very important. Rita Petrasik, our lighting designer, is phenomenal. And our goal is to see if we can get other small performing arts centers around the country to pick up this play with this cast and that we can travel with the show. And this is the first step in really testing that concept of whether or not it is a portable show. And here you can see we're in an intimate space.
Well, I was talking to one of the people from Piccolo Theater here, and they said you practically sold out the first weekend.
We were sold out the first weekend.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's proving that it is portable.
I think it is, and really we're looking logistically. You know, could we go into another space? Could we use the same staging? And essentially the staging has pretty much stayed intact.
That's terrific. Do you have plans of taking it to other theaters? You getting any bites?
Well, we're using this as sort of a showcase, and
okay.
we're reaching out to theaters. I mean, that's a long process. It's a very competitive process. But Carmen and Jim approached me the last week of the show. We went out for dinner, and they said, you know, we're really enjoying doing this play, and we see that there is this potential opportunity. We'd like to pursue it if you're interested in pursuing it. And we have some thoughts, too, about how this play can continue to grow. And as I said, as a playwright, it's been a different experience, but it's just been an exhilarating experience. I mean, usually you're by yourself. And
yeah, that's true.
And we feel like we're a team, and it's great.
So what do your producers think of it? They've got to be happy.
They're very happy. I mean, they had never produced anything before, and this has been a big thrill for them.
Well, we got to see this play back in New York. I would think there's enough motivation to.
Well,
to
there would be some poetic justice
yes.
if this play finally makes it back to New York. Like I said, I was so close to Broadway. I know it was the Upper West Side. I know it was off, but it was just 15 paces off Broadway.
Well, I think it's building momentum.
You do? Good.
Yeah. I mean, look how much theater from Chicago ends up going to New York and doing okay. There's some guys from Steppenwolf that are happy about invading
now,
New York.
I've heard about that company, Steppenwolf.
Yes.
They're on Halsted or they're on Lincoln Avenue. They're a Chicago theater company,
yeah.
right?
So you are you're from the Chicago suburbs, right? Tell us.
I grew up in Highland Park and had a 20-year detour to Boston. I had an old life. I had a publishing trade show business, and I sold my business. I'd started out as a writer, and I went back to writing. I wrote an independent film called With a Family Like Mine.
Yeah, tell us about that. That had some pretty good success, didn't it?
That did. It was in several film festivals. It opened up in Boca Raton, Florida. And, in fact, as I said on my website, you can actually download that play, that film.
Yeah, give us the website URL again.
The address of the website is www.toddlogansdesk.com. And on the website, there are three of my plays that have been recorded with the original cast. And you can also see the film. You can either watch it on your computer or you can download it.
Tell us the strategy of doing that. Most people wouldn't give away properties like that. But what's your theory on that?
Well, my theory is it's kind of like we're no longer in a bricks and mortar world like they talked about Barnes and Noble, that they can only carry so many books in a store. Maybe it's 250,000, but online they can carry 2.5 million. And I look at the theater world, there's only a limited number of buildings out there. And there's only a limited number of spots for new work, and even fewer spots for new works by playwrights that are not named playwrights. And by named playwrights especially, I mean those who are going to sell tickets, subscription tickets. And for a lot of theaters, of course, that's the tail that wags the dog. So taking that into consideration, I realized instead of having my plays now sitting on my desk, I can bring them back to life. And a play can be seen, but it can also be heard. Most of my plays are relationship plays. The action is more in the mind than it is necessarily on the stage. And they actually play like old radio plays.
Yeah, okay.
So my feeling was put them out there, and my work is going to get heard. And if the gods are nice to me, some artistic directors will also hear them and say, let's do the play.
Has that happened?
It has not happened yet. It's generated some interest. But I've had a couple of my plays, Tops or Bottoms, ran at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan.
I remember seeing that at Chicago Dramatists.
First play.
Yeah, that was terrific. So it's been done. It was done in Michigan.
It was done in Michigan.
Wow. So tell us what the future holds for you.
Well, right now, a lot of my time has really gone into this play. And I'm working on new plays right now, and my fingers are crossed. I'm going to get one finished, and we'll be up and running again, and chasing the dream with that play.
Wow, that's terrific. So, I always ask this question to people: where do you want to be in 5 years? What are some of the goals? Some of the things you haven't done, or that you really want to do?
Oh, I've been very fortunate in my life. So my goal is really for my family to be healthy, and for me to be healthy, and be able to have great quality time, and to continue to be creative and be able to write about subjects that are important to me.
Okay, great. Now, let me ask you, any possibility the Botanic Gardens would become a film? Either were made for television. I could see this as something that Showtime or HBO might be interested in.
Well, I'd certainly love to see that happen. Mm-hmm. One step at a time.
Okay. That's terrific. So let's give one last commercial for the show Botanic Gardens. It's at Piccolo Theater through
June 15th.
Through June 15th. And you go
Thursdays through Sunday, 8 o'clock Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, 3 o'clock on Sunday. And you can order tickets online at www.botanicgardentheplay.com.
And is it still 80-minute one act?
It's 70 minutes.
70 minutes,
act.
Okay.
And I believe that's a selling point for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, there's a big trend to going to one acts. It sustains the emotion and the tension better, and people like one acts.
But
yeah.
Again, and every evening there's a post show discussion with Carmen Roman, Jim Lemming, and myself. And as I say, the cast, the audience, They're really the third cast member, and we have great discussions. And my fingers are crossed, and I hope it's going to happen. But we're actually hoping to working out a deal with a restaurant in the neighborhood, and we're hoping for a couple evenings to walk the audience down to the restaurant for dessert and coffee, and having the post show discussion there.
Wow, that would be innovative. So stay tuned for that. You'll have it on your website too.
We'll have it on the website. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Todd, thank you very much. This has been terrific, and you once more prove how much creative talent there is in the Chicagoland area.
Well,
keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And folks, thanks for listening, and remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of May 26th, 2008. The Chicago company of Wicked will play its final performance on Sunday, January 25th, at the Oriental Theater. This is a sad announcement, but comes with good news. Upon closing, this Chicago production will have played exactly 1,500 performances and grossed over $200 million at the box office since Wicked first opened back on June 24th of 2005. During the course of its open-ended run, it has become the top-grossing and longest-running Broadway musical in Chicago history, and has been a winner of 15 major awards, including a Grammy and 3 Tony Awards. The company of Wicked currently has productions running in Chicago, New York, LA, London, Tokyo, Stuttgart, and Melbourne. For your chance to see Wicked before it leaves Chicago, be sure to check out our permanent link for Wicked on theaterinchicago.com. There you'll be able to find a whole bunch of stuff about Wicked. Victory Gardens Theater wraps up its season with Relatively Close, running from June 6th through July 13th. Relatively Close is a new work by James Sherman and tells the story of three Chicago sisters who are now grown and return to their family's old vacation home on Lake Michigan. This will be James Sherman's 12th world premiere at the Victory Gardens Theater. This production was developed in collaboration with and directed by Dennis Zajac, who is celebrating his 30th anniversary season as the artistic director of the Gardens, and this has been the longest tenure of any artistic director in Chicago. Congratulations, Dennis Zajac. We cannot wait to see the show. The national tour of Mary Poppins is coming to the Cadillac Palace Theater starting on March 11th of next year. Producers Cameron McIntosh and Thomas Schumacher have announced that after Chicago, this national tour of Mary Poppins is scheduled to play Cleveland, St. Louis, and Los Angeles, with other cities to be determined in the future. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago for more information about Mary Poppins and what those other cities may be. It is becoming festival time here in Chicago. The first annual Alcyon Festival will be running from June 19th through July 13th. For more information about this festival, check out halcyontheater.org. Also, the 9th annual Scald Storytelling Festival will be coming soon. This is, of course, presented by WNEP Theater and the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs. The event will take place at the Chicago Cultural Center that will begin on June 16th and run through June 21st, only 1 week. The Words in Motion Festival by the 16th Street Theater can be seen at the Berwyn Cultural Center. That festival opens on July 11th and runs all the way through August 16th. It will feature 3 plays, Aiming for Sainthood, The Scarlet Ibis, and The Pull of the Moon. Well, a lot of shows are doing very well here in Chicago, and many of them are actually extending their runs. Due to overwhelming demand, Timeline Theater is extending its run of Fiorello an additional 5 weeks of performances. The new closing date will now be July 20th. Shout, the mod musical, now playing at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place, starring the wonderful Maggie Portman, has announced an extension of its run that can now be seen through Sunday, July 20th of this year. The Raven Theater is announcing a 4-week extension of Neil Simon's Laughter on the 23rd floor. That show will now run through Saturday, July 26th. Congratulations to all the extensions. That's what we like to see here in Chicago. Michael Menendian and Joanne Montemuro, artistic directors of the Raven Theater, will receive a special award at the Non-Equity Jeff Award ceremony on June 9th. This will honor their contributions to the Chicago Theater. Since its founding back in 1983, Raven Theater has been honored by the Jeff Awards Committee with 30 nominations and 17 awards. The 35th anniversary Non-Equity Jeff Awards ceremony will be held at the Park West on Armitage in Chicago. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Todd Logan for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.